It's Tuesday, August 25th, 2026, and you're listening to Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon. Today in the program, we're in Psalm 13, with part one of a message titled, After Darkness, Light.
When periods of darkness and periods of depression come, and hardship, this is the common experience of all of us. It's real. And there are a whole variety of common circumstances of life that are completely outside of our control that can induce this, that can bring this about. And we easily slip into a sense of hopelessness, and we easily slip into a sense of abandonment from the Lord Himself. Where's the power? Where's God?
And now here's today's message from Pastor Chris.
If you're visiting this morning, we are working through the Psalms, and this was the songbook of God's people expressing the very real struggles, the sincere things that they went through in life, and how wonderful it is to see this morning in Psalm 13, something that you all will connect with this morning, and we'll consider where the answer came. So this is Psalm 13, How Long, O Lord, and we'll consider the entirety of the psalm. This is found on page 574 in the Pew Bible, if you're looking. To the choir master, a psalm of David. How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I take counsel in my soul and have sorrow in my heart all the day? How long shall my enemy be exalted over me? Consider and answer me, O Lord my God. Light up my eyes, lest I sleep the sleep of death. Lest my enemy say, I have prevailed over him. Lest my foes rejoice, because I am shaken. But I have trusted in your steadfast love. My heart shall rejoice in your salvation. I will sing to the Lord, because he has dealt bountifully with me. May the Lord bless this morning the hearing of his word. One of the things that Israel often charged the Lord with throughout Israel's history, it's a sad charge, but one of the things, especially that Ezekiel exposed, that they often said about the Lord is that he was unfair in his dealings with them. You'll remember this. Yet you say, the way of the Lord is not fair. Hear now, O house of Israel, is my way not fair? Is it not your ways that are not fair? We love to blame God often for the miseries that happen to us and that we experience in this life. The miseries sometimes that we experience, as we already considered in 1 Peter, that come as the consequences of the choices that we have made. That's not always the case. That's not always the case. But it is more often than we realize. We have an interesting struggle here presented to us this morning in Psalm 13. It's a favorite of many, and it's a beautiful psalm that challenges us to think about how the Lord really has been to His people, how He has treated His people, and how often we are unfair to Him. Psalm 13 is really a psalm like no other for the downcast and, we might say, the depressed. This is a psalm for depression. What makes the psalm so interesting as I was working through it this week is that David really doesn't give us any circumstance for what he's going through or backdrop to the psalm to figure out what happened to him. I always find that interesting that some do and some don't. And I believe that's immensely important in and of itself this morning as we look at Psalm 13, because what this psalm here is showing us is really an answer to all kinds of spiritual depression and whatever kind of form that takes on. Psalm 13 is really giving us a concrete answer to go forward. It is a psalm of great help. But it wants us to see something about us, and it wants us to see something about God in this struggle. Why would God put a psalm like this here? It's an interesting thing to think about. The mere presence of this psalm tells us that God desires for us that we know His deliverance in all the sadnesses that we face in this life. The mere presence of it tells us that. God wants us to know His deliverance. God wants us to know that there is an answer. But what does He want to teach us through that? In verses 1 and 2, you have from David a cry of despair. If you look there at verse 1, this is what we read. How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? Now, I think it's easy to read those questions and pass over just how weighty they are and how great the implications are in those questions. There's some serious things being implied there. There's some serious things being questioned there. Whatever David is describing here in the course of his own life, one thing is very clear. He feels totally and completely abandoned by the Lord. And that raises the next kind of question for us is that true? Is that true? Does God actually abandon His people? Does God forget His people? Is it really fair of David to say that of the Lord? I mean, that's the first sort of thing I think about when I look at Psalm 13. He's making a pretty serious accusation here. Does the Lord forget His people? That really requires being answered, doesn't it? Most Sundays, I'll, at the end of the service, raise my hands and I'll give the Aaronic blessing. I will say, the Lord bless you. The Lord make His face to shine upon you. Did you catch what David said at the beginning of the psalm? Why have you turned your face from me? Why have you taken that blessing from my life? Is David telling the truth? Is this what we can expect from God? It's an amazing thing of who this comes from. I mean, this is the guy, boys and girls, who struck down Goliath, isn't it? This is the guy who was the powerful king of Israel. This was the one who the Lord had used in a wondrous way to lead His people. And here, from the mouth of this giant, comes this kind of question. How much longer will you continue to forget me? David feels forsaken and David feels forgotten. Anyone will tell you in the course of their life that these are the two components to depression. Forsaken and being forgotten. They're the feelings of someone who has fallen into depression. He feels alone. He feels weary. It's the kind of feeling of rejection that often makes you feel alone. And it's that overwhelming sense of emptiness that comes over people, isn't it? Lost and without direction, and you're amazed that you have slid into that, and you don't know what's caused it, you don't know what's happened, but here you are, and you feel like you have sunken right into a pit. It's the kind of thing that makes you want to lay on your bed and not get up. And the worst kind of pain about it is, you struggle with the question, has God's face, God's presence, God's blessing been taken from me? Now you can understand this. I believe this psalm is describing a whole different kind of circumstance. This is really a little bit different from what we think are the big sufferers in life, isn't it? Sure, this psalm applies to the big sufferings of this life. But I remember a man years ago who I ministered to, and he was in his early 50s and he suffered a stroke. And you know, for 25 years, that man was confined to his bed in a convalescent home at 50. And I remember going to visit him, and he couldn't use his body. Mind was attacked. And the loneliness he would get out in discussing these things to me. He died a few years ago. The suffering that believer had to undergo was something that most of us probably will never know. Some are called to go through it. There are many psalms that address it. There are the big tragedies of life. There are the real big tragedies. You have a whole book of Job to describe that kind of stuff that goes on in people's lives. And other psalms describe it too. Sudden tragedies. Psalm 77, I believe, is one where the psalmist says, in the day of my trouble, I just thought about you and I was troubled. I couldn't even handle thinking about the Lord in light of what I was going through. Many of you have been through that. You know that. Or you will. Psalm 13 applies to that, but I'm not convinced it's that kind of psalm. Psalm 13, what makes it so unique, what makes Psalm 13 so useful to the Christian, is that it gets down to the very common and real struggles of the believer in everyday life. When periods of darkness and periods of depression come and hardship, this is the common experience of all of us. It's real. And there are a whole variety of common circumstances of life that are completely outside of our control that can induce this, that can bring this about. And we easily slip into a sense of hopelessness, and we easily slip into a sense of abandonment from the Lord Himself. Where's the power? Where's God? The mundaneness of life can bring it. The monotony of it all, day after day. The same old routine, the same struggles, and then the continuance of evil. Things never seem to get better. Things only seem to get worse. You'll notice David references enemies in this psalm constantly. It seems through all of this, God's absent. I've struggled with that. You've struggled with that. What's amazing is that the world is constantly describing this to us too. Its reference point, though, has nothing to do with God. Listen to their songs. You know, here we have God's people's songs. Listen to their songs. I was reading the words this past week of the Beatles song, Eleanor Rigby. I hope no one knows it, by the way. And why I would know it, it was written in 1966. But I considered that song. It was number one on the charts in the UK. And you know, listen to what it expresses. Ah, look at all the lonely people. Look at all the lonely people. All the lonely people. Where do they come from? All the lonely people. Where do they belong? And then notice what that song attacked. It attacked God's answer. Father McKenzie, writing the words of a sermon that no one will hear. That's encouraging. Look at him working. Why does he care? Eleanor Rigby died in the church where she was buried along with her name. Nobody came. Father McKenzie wiping the dirt from his hands as he walks from the grave. No one was saved. Ah, look at all the lonely people. Imagine how many people went around singing that and memorizing that. No answer in preaching. No one saved. They're just lonely. Going nowhere, they're going to die in hopelessness. The world expresses this all the time, doesn't it? You look at the world songs. These are the songs that dominate the charts of number ones by this sad world. They're declaring it to us. They're speaking it to us. What makes David's cry different? Kind of surprising this would come from one of God's people. And maybe that's the real point. Isn't it? This cry, Lord, you have forgotten me. You have turned your shining face from me. It's one thing to for the world to describe abandonment, but it's a whole other thing for the Christian to describe it, because his whole thought process is governed by a knowledge that the Lord is sovereign over every single aspect and detail and affair of his life. And that knowledge of his sovereignty and perception that God is not acting in a particular circumstance in our sorrows is a rather tough pill to swallow. I don't like it. I struggle with it. Oh, said Job, that I were as in the months of old. Notice, he slipped into depression. As in the days when God watched over me, when His lamp shone upon my head, and by His light I walked through darkness, as I was in my prime, when the friendship of God was upon my tent, when the Almighty was yet with me, when my children were all around me, when my steps were washed with butter, and the rock poured out for me streams of oil. It's all gone now. Where's God? I had it all. It's all ripped away. When we get past the superficiality of how we're all dressed today, and the veneer, and we get past all of that, I suspect this sermon is connecting with a whole bunch of people right now who are living this. And you don't know why. And you struggle with, are you going anywhere? You feel alone. You feel like you're in a spiritual wasteland. You feel entrapped. This is spiritual depression. You can't see beyond the circumstance and you wonder where the Lord is. I sink. What's wrong with me? David's expressing it. And in verse 2, he says something that I find just remarkable. He says, how much longer shall I take counsel in my soul? I think mind is probably a better word to use there. Shall I have sorrow in my heart all the day long? It's an amazing thing. He's saying to the Lord, how much longer do I have to wrestle with this? How much longer, Lord, do I have to continue to go in myself and deal with this? Now, I don't know if you caught the connection there, but we really should see the connection, this general circumstance here, this connection between the mind and the feelings that are going on. At least in a general sense, really, David is describing something. But what's wrong with him? He has questioned the Lord's presence. And in the next breath, he has told us that he is weary of going inward. I'm tired of going inward. So, in his mind, he is wrestling with the question of, how does this circumstance really show that God cares about me? When my feelings have overwhelmed my heart to lead me to the conclusion that he's completely absent. There's an inward struggle, of course, of what he knows to be true in the mind and the inconsistency with how he is feeling. We could say it this way. The feelings have drawn him into despair, suggesting things to him that God is completely absent, leaving him, right? Leaving us with the question, is his perception of things right or wrong here? I mean, that's what we need to answer. Feelings are immensely misleading. I'm a guy, and I struggle with it. I learned this, not something I expected as a preacher, about Mondays. Mondays are awful days for preachers. When I first started to preach Sunday, I was up on cloud nine. And I was excited, and I loved the ministry. Oh, I could die in the pulpit today! And then Monday would come. And it was awful. It was the worst kind of depression. And I thought, what in the world is wrong with me? I mean, I am just down in the dumps and Darcy would kick me out of the house. Sunday was here, Monday was here. And it was a radical shift. Sunday God was with me. Monday he was gone, right? Was it true? See, if you look carefully at verse 1, what is the source of his complaint? Will you forget me forever? Whatever this depression has been ongoing, and he's pushing his own instability, his up and down life upon the one who is stable, isn't he? He's pushing that upon the stable one. He is pushing the fact of his change, of his struggle, upon the one who does not change. Why have you withdrawn, O Lord? Where are you? Does God leave us? Does God leave us? The reality is that His very promise in the covenant of grace, all the way back, is that God said over and over and over again He would never leave His people. Ever, 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 ever. If you were to go through Genesis, you would be struck by something that happened. Every time God's people were in hardship, you would have the statement over and over and over again, Genesis and Exodus, and God remembered. He never forgot. When Israel was at its darkest moment of apostasy, Isaiah would stand up, and you know what he would declare? And think of Psalm 13:1 as I read this. Sing for joy, O heavens, and exult, O earth. Break forth, O mountains, into singing. For the Lord has comforted His people, and will have compassion on His afflicted. But Zion said, the Lord has forsaken me. My Lord has forgotten me. Can a woman forget her nursing child, that she should have no compassion on the son of her womb? Even these may forget, yet I will not forget you. Now David has just said, Lord, why have you forgotten? The Lord declared, inspired in His word, I will not forget. I will never leave nor forsake. Why is he going through this? It's a really important point, because many old Reformed writers would describe, theologians would talk about God departing for a season. And Christians have described this. You cry out to God and it seems that there is no answer, and the distance only seems worse with prayer, and they don't seem to get past the roof, and there's nothing but struggle, and everything feels so questionable. Notice I'm emphasizing feeling. They were always careful to maintain that it was not God's presence, but His countenance, His joy. The Westminster Confession saying that God can temporarily withdraw the light of His countenance. And you might say, well, why does God do that? I don't know the circumstance here in Psalm 13. David is sunk into a pit. His enemies are attacking. And what is the thing that we do? I know this. What is the thing that we do in these circumstances? When discouragement comes. When we have circumstances that we dislike or we are confronted with, we can run. I've seen people do that in the life of the church. But the real thing that people do is that they turn inward. You know, every false prophet of our day has told us to go inward. Isn't it interesting that every single false prophet of our day, the number one bestseller years ago, his 7 steps for blessed life, said this. Number one, keep pressing forward. Number two, be positive toward yourself. Number three, develop better relationships. Number four, form better habits. Number five, embrace the place where you are.
That's all the time we have for you today. We thank you for joining us here on Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon. We hope you'll join us again next time for part two of this message from Pastor Chris. Thanks again. Until next time, God bless.